Welcome back to Housewarming, your inside look at real Irish homes transforming for a greener energy future. I'm Kim Buckley, and this week we're back with interior designers and podcasters Kate O'Driscoll and Jenny Sheehan from Rip It Up. This time they're joined by SEAI's Stephen Farrell to talk about traditional homes, houses with character and history, but let's face it, often plenty of problems too. Kate and Jenny tell me about their experiences renovating period properties, and Stephen answers some listener questions about the traditional homes pilot scheme run by SEAI. I'm then off to Tipperary to the home of Clifford Guest, where everything Kate, Jenny and Stephen covered has been put into practice. Clifford's beautiful home in Clochjordan is over 200 years old, and he is the sixth generation of his family to live there. He gave me the full story of his renovation, but first, let's go to Kate, Jenny and Stephen. So Kate and Jenny from the Rip It Up podcast, thanks a million for joining us again on Housewarming. You're very good to come back. Talking about something a little bit differently today, SEAI has launched a new traditional homes pilot, which means that people who are in listed buildings or, you know, hundreds of years old homes can actually avail of our grants. But I'm not the expert on this. My colleague Stephen Farrell is, and he also joins us here today. Thanks a million, Stephen.
No problem.
So tell us, what is this new traditional homes pilot from SEAI?
Good question. Come here. I feel like I need to upgrade my house, guys. The traditional homes pilot, okay, we're focusing on homes that were built and we use indicatively 1940 or earlier. Okay, but the main difference is the wall construction. So a lot of these homes are built from solid masonry, brick or stone or clay. They may have single glazed windows, kind of timber frames, slate tiled roofs and so on. But they need to be treated differently in terms of the older constructions, such as the one described. They manage moisture, different to modern forms of construction. So years ago, the walls were built thicker. So when it rains, the moisture seeped into the wall and it evaporated over time. So that whole wetting and drying cycle passed through. Whereas modern forms of construction that came into play post 1940, your cavity wall construction, your hollow block wall construction or your timber frame construction, they were designed to keep moisture out. So it acts differently. So what we've done is we've developed a pilot program that was launched in October last year that allows the necessary flexibility for treating these homes. So they need to be insulated and apply a different strategy. A lot of experts in the market say do as little as possible, but just what's needed. So you're taking a different approach. You don't super insulate these walls. You kind of take a lighter approach and do a different retrofit strategy in terms of air tightness, a proper good ventilation system, and then maintenance, because a drier wall is a warmer wall. Okay, and a lot of people forget that. So in terms of repairing your gutters and so forth. So we're trying to get people to focus on that in terms of traditional homes pilot. It's delivered through our panel of one-stop shops, who are expert panels who would bring a homeowner through a whole retrofit process. But what's different in the traditional homes pilot is we ask the homeowner and the one-stop shop to engage accredited architect, engineer or building surveyor to bring that element of building conservation expertise and moisture management expertise into the whole retrofit process. And another key part of the traditional homes pilot, which is so important, is we don't ask people to chase really good BER values of A, B or C. We say what's appropriate for the home is what's needed. And we don't have energy improvement targets. So it's kind of taking that sensitive approach. And I suppose as a pilot as well, we're just trying to inform the market, prime the market, engage with the experts, train up and listen to the frustrations from the installers on the ground, and just develop the market in the area, because there's 300,000 of these homes that were built pre-1940 that need to be addressed from an energy efficiency perspective, but done in a nice, sensitive way, respecting the heritage culture and so forth of the building.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks a million, Stephen. And Kate and Jenny, you're both in very old homes, but Jenny, yours wasn't listed, so this doesn't apply to you. But Kate, yours is listed, so this traditional homes pilot would have been music to your ears, but you kind of missed the boat.
I missed the boat. I remember just seeing the ads for it, just as we had kind of planning gone in, maybe, or yeah, we were kind of waiting for our planning permission to come through. So we just missed it, but we did renovate, you know, I said in the last episode that we renovated a Victorian home and got it up to a B2, but it's not an easy process. Like, and we got a lot of conflicting information and a lot of very expensive quotes. Yeah. So this would have been absolute music to my ears.
It's a very good point, Kate, because what we found is as we were developing the programme, the market just needs to be kind of made aware of the different sensitivities that need to be taken into account when you're dealing with these types of homes built in this era. And that's why I suppose a key part of the pilot is that we're engaging these accredited architects and engineers who have that knowledge in building conservation and moisture management and so forth, so they can ease people's concerns. So they know they're making a big investment. They want to know what they're installing is compatible and will stand the test of time.
There are some, I won't say all, but there were some quotes and I suppose work proposals we got to say that we could just use normal insulation and just, you know, put in new windows and just insulate the floor. Like, what would happen in an old house like mine if you did stuff like that?
If you did stuff like that, and do you know what? That's that awareness piece. What happens is in a lot of those homes, as I was saying from the start, these are solid wall construction types. And say if it's an exposed, say if it's brickwork that's not rendered, you've driving rain and that moisture and capillary action moves the moisture inwards. And the fear is that you'll get a buildup of the relative humidity between the new insulation you install, so it could be EPS or PIR on the wall and solid masonry. And you could have damp or mold growth in those zones and it can come through to the surface of the wall. So these manifest over time. And as for people to understand the importance of, I suppose, looking at the retrofit strategy, get the necessary experts involved. There's great analysis out there that you can do from the outset, Woofy analysis, Woofy Pro, that can actually simulate your wall and kind of put up a design with data backing up a safe solution. So what we're trying to avoid is trapping moisture within the wall and the negative effects from that, such as condensation, relative humidity, and then mold growth, which has issues down the line.
And Stephen, we were out in Clochjordan in Tipperary to one of your traditional home pilots with Clifford Guest. And he was in this amazing old farmhouse. It's hundreds of years old. It's been in his family for six generations. So he was a great example. I mean, we saw the house. It's absolutely fabulous. We were in the bedroom and he said, some of my family members were born here. Some of my family members died here. He's now sleeping in that room. But it's old stonework. And he actually lifted up the plaster that they're using, lime plaster. And, you know, it does feel different in your hand. Mm. But Kate, you're in a listed home in Dublin. Mm. So the difference between all of these traditional homes, they are varying, Stephen. So tell us a few examples of the types of homes. I know they're pre-1940s, but how old are they and what types of homes do we have? So we had Clifford's farmhouse and Kate's listed homes, but what else is out there?
Well, you've also, a lot of the applications that we're seeing coming through now all around the country, which is great, built in the 1800s. So you could have exposed brick facades that could be, say, 250 mil deep, or you could have the cottages in the country that could be a 600 mil masonry wall. And they all need to be treated differently. You need to assess what's the existing position. Is there cement render from possibly maladaption or ill-informed upgrade? From the outset, has I suppose the necessary work done to preserve the situation or not of the house, in terms of what does the homeowner want to do in terms of their budget, and kind of are they ill-informed in terms of we want to get to an A-rated and a B-rated home. So there's a variety of homes out there, and I suppose what we're looking to do is test the market and see what's coming in for us, coming in at us, and then getting a sense of, well, how much is this natural material? How much is the consultation piece? So we're trying to build up that knowledge to be able to, I suppose, be able to address the 300,000 homes that fit that bracket between now and the end of the decade and beyond. So you're getting a wide variety of homes from solid brick to solid masonry to clay structures, and some of them are protected, some of them are proposed protected architectural conservation areas as well. So we're getting all that information and the constraints from the market, and we're hoping to design a solution that we'd be able to grant aid the vast majority of these going forward.
And Jenny, your home is hundreds of years old, but it wasn't listed. But you were still trying to do a home energy upgrade while, you know, being respectful to the age of the home. So what types of materials did you use, and how did you stay within the traditions of the home and what it was built for?
Yeah, good question. So the house is built in the 1890s originally and was absolutely Baltic when I got in. There's just no insulation whatsoever. So obviously I wanted to go for comfort. I want to go for warmth. I also really wanted to get my bills down, because there's nothing like insulating a house well to get your bills down to almost zero. So it's really, really important to look at it. I didn't have the same issues with material types as some of the older houses did. I didn't need to worry about lime plaster. I didn't need to worry so much about breathability. So I was able to use just the more traditional, or just the more modern, insulating materials. Just Kingspan, you know, throughout was fine. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really any concerns there. There wasn't anything I need to think about. I did have somebody in the last couple of years do up a house who wanted to remain really sympathetic to the environment as much as possible. And they used hemp insulation mm-hmm. for many reasons, which worked out so, so well, because it's obviously a very sustainable material. It's a really, really good bio option for people. But it's also super breathable, and it's really, really suitable for old homes as well. So it was lovely to see that in a very old home from a conservation perspective and materials perspective.
And you have obviously hundreds of followers, thousands of followers on your Rip It Up podcast Instagram page. And you said that the traditional homes pilot was something that everybody was asking you about. So you got them to send in some questions.
Yeah.
Did you get loads?
Yeah, we got loads.
Brilliant.
Believe it or not, there are a lot of the questions I would have asked myself, to be honest, because these are things like that I wanted to know.
Yeah.
And I would want to know if I was applying for this grant now, or the retrofit now. So one of the main things was what's the process, I guess? Yeah. So I bought an old home, protected or not protected, but I know it's an old home, hundreds of years old or whatever. So where do I start?
Yeah, it's a great question, and sometimes that can stump people, they end up being distracted and go spend the money elsewhere. On our website, you just go into our website and type in traditional homes pilot, and there's a great introductory page there. It'll say important facts like you don't have to hit a B2, so we have that flexibility, and also it'll show you the list of one-stop shops that are partaking in the pilot, in the traditional homes pilot. So what you do is you see the list of one-stop shops, you click into the contact details, you make contact with the one-stop shop. They'll have a quick call and they'll help you link up with a conservation architect or an engineer and so forth. And then you start the process from there. They'll complete a home energy assessment, but they'll also work with the architect to do a kind of a building condition survey. So you get a sense of where the house is at, the preparatory work you need to do. And more importantly, you get a sense of the materials and the costs associated with it. So that's probably the first port of call. Get onto the website, go into the SEI Traditional Homes pilot page. You'll see the list of one-stop shop providers. Call around, call two or three of them, get a sense of what they do, how open to the project they are, and go from there.
And is that contact from the one-stop shop, are they with you throughout the process, all the way through to the end of the build?
Till the end of the
are
build.
They? That's brilliant.
Yeah, so what the one-stop shop does is, in its simplest form, the one-stop shop was developed to try and help home to remove the barriers to retrofit. So they're retrofit experts. They'll provide information for you to make a decision. They complete all the necessary paperwork, which stump a lot of people, because if there's a bit of paperwork there, they're experts at doing this. Plus as well, they deduct the grant up front, which is very important. So you could have a traditional upgrade. It could come to 70k.
That was actually my next question.
That was you.
It's an important scenario. Like, affordability is huge.
It's huge, because I know a lot, like, across a lot of things, not just SAI grants, but across a lot of things, that some things I was looking into recently. If all things work out really well, if you've loads of money that you can invest up front, because then you get it back. Yeah. But not everyone has that. So that, to remove that barrier, that makes it a lot more accessible.
Huge. And it was something that came back. Like, people want to do the right thing and invest in, I suppose, the comfort of their home, the energy savings, the environmental benefits, improving their asset value, all those key parts of what people want to do. But that overall cost can be a stumbling block. Now, we know the balance, it can be a lot, but if you have a 70k cost from a retrofitter and you get 25k of that deducted up front,
Yeah, that's huge.
It's a huge help in terms of the proposition you're going to the financial institution or whoever to try and get that money together to do that. Yeah. And another key aspect is a lot of homeowners worry about, oh, am I going to get the grant in the end? When does the grant come through? Because that's deducted off up front, it puts the responsibility back on the experts to do it right and get the grant paid to them as opposed to yourselves. Coupling that then with the low-cost finance that's in place at the minute as well, where you can get very good interest rates on the loans of 3% or lower, which kind of helps them in that part of the equation as well.
They're the new SBCI loans that have been introduced recently. So if you're going through a one-stop shop provider, you can get a really low interest loan for these home energy upgrades. So it's something to consider as well if you're embarking on a renovation and you are overwhelmed by the price, that this is something that you can do. You know, you're getting a grant, but you're also, you know, a lot of people would be entitled to these loans as well. So we are trying to make it more accessible for people to carry out a home energy upgrade. Yeah.
So it's so important, especially with the different cost of living demands and so forth. Too. What we find with the traditional homes also, and you probably know this, a lot of stuff can be done in terms of repairing your property beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, you see a lot of these older houses out there where the gutters are leaking, tiles have slipped, pointing in the brickwork is missing, there's gaps in the brickwork, and even at your window and sill junction. So moisture is getting into the wall. Yeah. And the problem is, the wetter the wall, the colder the wall is. Yeah. So the first port of call is to do those, to fix those areas and maintain your building, and then go from there. And because we're not looking for super insulated wall structures, because it mightn't be compatible with the structure, you don't have to put as much insulation on the wall. Like, for example, a drywall could be 25%, reduce the heat loss by 25%, which is noteworthy. And then if you install, say, 50 mil of, say, calcium silicate, you could reduce it further. So you've done a lot there without kind of major volumes of insulation, and you're doing the basics in terms of making sure that the wall is dry and it remains dry in as much as we can do.
Yeah.
So I had a question actually come in on that one around, somebody was told, this was one of those big ancient houses down the country near where I'm from in East Clare, and really, really thick wall, at least 600 mils, if not more, old stone walls. And they were given the advice that the house or the walls needed to be dried out before anything could really be done. Yeah. Is that realistic advice? And if so, how does somebody go about doing that? And I hope the answer is dehumidifier, because the answer to everything in my life is dehumidifier.
Yeah, possibly dehumidifier or time.
I mean, they were given the advice to kind of pump the heating, you know, for a while, which I don't know if
it doesn't seem natural.
How long are we looking at there, you know?
It probably, like the real world, you need to get the work done. You want to get the work done. And at the end of the day, you want to get the excess moisture out from leaks and the building not performing. But as well, I suppose it depends on the retrofit strategy, because you're going to be putting vapor open, capillary active insulations on the wall, which will work. Okay, if there's a bit of residual moisture, it'll come out as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of getting the balance right. But that's where the key part is, get the conservation expert in. But I'd be going down the dehumidifier route as well.
And so forth.
Because the drying will happen naturally with the environment and the pressure difference between the outside and the inside. But the main thing that I would always see is make sure there's not excess moisture coming in after the upgrade.
In
terms of not having that maintenance, continued maintenance. Because if you look at the moisture wetting mechanisms, and I don't want to go too far into it, but driving rain is huge. I'd see it like a beach ball. Vapor. So moisture, vapor that moves in the air is like a football in terms of volume. And then the vapor diffusion. So in terms of gas in the air, that's like a tennis ball. So the big areas trying to stop water, rainwater getting in into the structure, because it basically reduces the thermal conductivity. So you're getting increased heat loss. So if you can keep that wall dry, have insulation solutions on the wall that will promote the permeability and capillarity of the system, you're in a good place from the outset.
Yeah. Brilliant.
I think the first port to call in any old house is a dehumidifier.
Yeah.
I think everyone's just
It's just the nature of time. Like, leaks happen. Gutters slip. slates slip and it's left deteriorate and moisture just gets into the structure.
Yeah.
And the key thing is to recognise that and put a plan in place to, I suppose, mitigate it.
Yeah.
And make sure it doesn't happen again after the retrofit works happen.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said, you know, don't do the quick fixes, because my first house in Dublin was derelict.
Yeah.
So they had done nothing to it, right? So everything was almost original, which is what you want,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
in an
yeah.
old house. Now the other side of it, the house we're in now, we bought, a family had been there for 50 years. They had done a lot of DIY. They had done a lot of upgrades. They had ripped up floorboards. They had chased walls. There was actually a power cable going diagonally across one wall one day that was drilled into for wardrobes.
Oh, yeah.
So like there was a lot of DIY work done, but part of that DIY work was where they slapped gypsum plaster where there should have been lime.
Yeah.
And what happens, or vinyl wallpaper and put it over it. And it's a layer of insulation and the walls look fine. And a couple of years later, you pull off that wallpaper and the walls crumble.
There's crumble and there's mold behind it.
Yeah.
And all the issues with that in terms of respiratory and kind of, you know, these kind of concerning health issues.
And your wall falling down.
Your wall falling down and the fabric deterioration. So the first protocol is to get that gypsum plaster off the wall because it traps moisture.
Yeah.
And you're letting the wall breathe after that. But the problem is maladaption. And having the awareness, and a lot of homeowners as well want to make their house warmer and healthier and cozier and get those added benefits. Mm-hmm. But when an expert comes out and says, oh, I'm not just going to make your house warmer, I'm going to have to do remedial works that you haven't envisaged or costed, it can put them off even more. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to get them to understand the importance of stepping back, taking off whatever is needed to get the baseline right, and then going from there.
So your followers are super interested in this scheme, and a lot of them are considering buying traditional homes or in traditional homes. So what types of questions are they asking you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the main things I got was, what's the difference between insulating or improving an old home versus a newer modern construction home?
What I would say is you do as little as possible, but as much as you need to do.
Yeah.
And so forth. And it's important that you understand an element of building conservation and moisture management. So you're not insulating the homes as much as you would, say, in a 1980s home. It could be just a vapor open insulation to U value maybe of 0.5 or 0.6.
I had a question. What are the common reasons for grants not being awarded? I suppose that listener was kind of thinking they don't want to go through the process and find that, you know, they were supposed to do this or they didn't have that or whatever. So what are the main kind of pitfalls for people to look for?
And thankfully, there's not that many, because with the one-stop shop, and the way it works is the grant is deducted up front, so the homeowner has felt the benefit and then they go through the work. But the main thing is you don't start works before a grant offer is awarded.
Yeah.
You don't buy or install the material. And then it's signed off by the one-stop shop and the architect at the end of the project. Once they're in place and our certain specifications are met, say, for example, if a heat pump is installed, that it meets the minimum requirements in terms of our specification. So if those aren't hit, there will be questions of over-grant payment.
Yeah.
But they can all be ironed out and confirmed up front. So the risk is very minimal.
And you mentioned heat pump. What's the suitability for old homes and heat pumps?
Quite good.
Really?
On the basis that it's fully designed, it's sized correctly, there's a proper heat analysis done in terms of the space it's going to heat, it's commissioned, it's installed and commissioned, and the homeowner understands how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What we find a lot of is people focus a lot on the heat loss through the wall, and they install heat pumps, and I don't know, we want the same attention brought in the installation standards, the design, installation, commissioning, and the handover side of it. But a heat pump will perform based on the size it's designed and spec'd for within the volume of air it needs to hit at high efficiencies. The problem is, if it's not installed correctly and operating optimally, those efficiencies drop.
Okay.
So a lot has to do with the installation and the commissioning.
Okay, okay. And you mentioned one-stop shop. Do you have to go one-stop shop for everything, or is there any particular grants that are like most impactful, most valuable that people should kind of consider first?
For the traditional homes pilot, where you're looking for grant support on traditional homes from a whole house perspective, a whole house design, which we promote, it's via the one-stop shops.
Okay.
That's the way we've taken it. And what we've done is we've made sure people are linking up with designers and practitioners to get the best advice in terms of the building conservation and the moisture management side of things as well, which is really important.
For this grant, does somebody have to do it all in one go, one big renovation, or could they piecemeal it over a few years?
The one-stop shop is kind of a whole house design.
Okay.
So it's designed all in one go. So you're looking at the strategy as a whole and you're taking it from there. So it's very much a whole house design. So it kind of doesn't work. I don't think that chimes even well with retrofitting a traditional home, doing it measure by measure. Because if you insulate the walls, okay, there's extra heat generated within the house. You need a proper ventilation system to kind of reduce the risk of, the extra risk of, say, relative humidity built up or moisture in the air. So we always kind of promote a whole house design, which can mean multiple measures.
And Stephen, we have a housing crisis at the moment. And you can't get more sustainable than doing up what you already have.
Yeah.
So this is where the traditional homes pilot comes in. So, you know, we are restoring hundreds of years old homes that do exist already.
It's great.
How does this pilot become a permanent program?
That's a great question. Basically, what happens is, and the general gist of it is, like we put a pilot in place to get a sense of the challenges out there, to prime the market, get homeowners aware of the sensitivities and requirements, build a supply chain in terms of these people who install these lime thermal plasters and so forth. What we do is we take the learnings, say from the first 100 homes that come through the process, and we develop a mainstream program. Like there has to be a mainstream program there. There's like there's 275,000 of these homes there. So it's the learnings we get back from the pilot that will help us inform how we're going to go forward in terms of addressing that key cohort.
And do you think this will encourage people to buy traditional homes, whereas before they might be put off? And what is your advice for someone who is trying to get on the property ladder or, you know, moving home? What's your advice for them if maybe a traditional home is in the mix there?
That's a great question. And do you know what? You see more and more people like saying, do you know what? I can buy that existing property there, there's a vacant homes refurbishment grant, there's the SEI grant, if they're informed, there's excellent supports there. But what I would say is prior to purchasing, I'd engage an architect, engineer or surveyor who are expert in the area to give you a sense of what you're getting into in terms of the repair work, what it's going to cost to bring it up to a good comfortable level in terms of comfort and so on. So that's probably key to get your head around that. So you're putting all that whole equation together, recognising the grants that are available to help you bring that derelict property back to life. So getting good advice from the outset is pretty much key, I would feel.
And Jenny, do you think, obviously you're in touch with a lot of homeowners, a lot of people on the house hunt, are people open to buying traditional homes?
I think people will be screaming for the rooftops for this grant. I really do. Because I think the grants available are amazing. I think if I was to pick a top question I get asked, aside from how do I get more storage into my house, it's probably grants and how do I navigate the grants. And I think it does really address all the pitfalls that people come up against, which is, you know, I can't work around a conservation lien on my house, or I can't hit the B2 or whatever it might be, or I can't avail of XYZ because the you know, the building materials are ABC, whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think it's going to be absolutely devoured.
There's a great connect there because the Department of Housing have a conservation advice grant support program in place that you get 67% of the grant amount. I think it's 5K for that conservation advice. Mm-hmm. So you can get a good report and then they can put it against the SEI Traditional Homes Pilot. So you have your advice support and then you have your installation support as well. Mm-hmm. So it's there. So in terms of if people are interested, I would encourage them to go to our website, look at the one-stop shops that are partaking in it. Or if you want to get in touch with us directly, it's onestopshop@sei.ie. Mm-hmm. And we're dealing a lot of these homeowners one-to-one as well. That's the beauty about having a kind of a relatively small number. We get to know the design professionals and a lot of the homeowners as well. It's all positive. It's just to get a bit more momentum underneath it.
Yeah, because it's heartbreaking to see empty houses around the country. Do you know, it's just so frustrating
the situation
to see what can be done.
And especially with Clifford, who is part of the pilot program, and it means so much to him and his family. I know it's great for people who are house hunting to be able to buy a traditional home and avail of these grants. But for someone like Clifford, where this house has been in his family for hundreds of years, six generations were brought up there, for him to be able to bring it up to spec, to be able to live there himself, means so much to him. There's so much emotional attachment for him that it's absolutely fantastic to see. And we're very excited about this pilot program, which will hopefully become permanent very soon, Stephen. So Stephen Farrell from SEAI, thank you very much for joining us on Housewarming. And Kate and Jenny from the Rip It Up podcast, thanks a million.
Thank you.
So with all that advice for renovating traditional homes, let's head off to Tipperary to chat to Clifford about his ambitious project in Clochjordan.
Right, which if you follow me, I'll bring you in.
Yeah, and thanks a million for having us back to your home.
A lot of fun.
So this used to be, we always refer to it as the scullery. Actually, it used to be two rooms. So this is where they used to churn the milk,
yeah.
Make the butter, all those good things. That was the open fire. And so we're going back into the replacement for the 70s extension here.
What will be here? It's a hallway?
So it's a hallway and the stairs upstairs.
Oh, gorgeous, yeah.
This is the kitchen. So that's south facing. So that's the old house. And then this is the block build. And this is... This is always called the parlour,
mm-hmm.
where you parlay, where you talk. This is where you'd have your guests in. So we're going to have a wood-burning stove, which will be sourcing its air externally,
mm-hmm.
and the chimney is sealed. Don't see us using it all that often, apart from if the heat pump doesn't have electricity because of the power blackout or whatever, we have a source of heat centrally in the house, so it should be it's a backup essentially.
Clifford Guest, you're very welcome to our podcast Housewarming. I want to ask you where we are and about this absolutely amazing home.
Okay, well thanks very much, Kim. Delighted to be involved. We're in Gerta Valla, Clochjordan. Gerta Valla is the townland name, but it's also the name of the house. And the house is a old farmhouse. It's at least 200 years old, but a little bit more. And my family have been living here for the last 200 years. I'm the sixth generation. It was built as a rubble stone house. Two rooms downstairs, kitchen and living room, and two bedrooms upstairs. And that original house is the challenge, I suppose, in terms of this project. To try and bring something which is so old into current building regulations and standards, and to make it not only sort of a legacy home, but also up to energy standards where we will have low outgoings on the cost of heating the house, high quality in terms of just the comfort within the house, and that as we sort of get older, that it will be an affordable place to have in the long term.
We'll get into all the home energy upgrade stuff later on, but I want to talk about the house itself. It's over 200 years old and you're the sixth generation who's going to be living there, but you grew up in that house, Clifford.
I did, yeah. I was reared in the house along with my grandparents. So there was an extension built to the original house in 1962. When my father got married, and that was a simple kitchen, living room downstairs and a bedroom upstairs. And we were hoping that that could just be upgraded, but the quality of the foundations in particular was so poor that we had to take it down. But we've replaced it on the same footprint. So the front facade of the house will be exactly as it was as I was reared in the house. In the 70s, there was an extension built at the back, and that was when bathroom shower was brought into the house. It's very similar to most farming houses in the area around that time. And again, that was taken down, built slightly bigger at the back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've spent my life living in the townland for the most part.
And did you have any siblings growing up there with
you? Yeah, so I have two brothers and a sister, so we grew up together. Not only did I have my paternal grandparents in the house, I had my maternal grandparents at the top of the lane who moved down as they got older to be closer to my mother. So actually, I thought everybody had grandparents either living in the house or at the top of a lane. So it was a nice way to be raised.
That's fantastic. And how do your siblings feel about you bringing new life into your old family home?
Well, I'm very fortunate because my brothers and my sister, they've been very supportive. And there's a genuine love, I think, of the place. And it extends beyond my siblings, my nephews and my nieces. They spent an awful lot of time with my parents in the house. And they're very very fond of the place and spending time there as well. So there's been a lot of emotional support to my wife and myself to engage with what is a fairly daunting project, because it would be much easier in many ways just to have a greenfield site.
Mm-hmm. You didn't stray far. You grew up in this house, but you moved out and you built a home basically as the crow flies one field away.
Two fields away, yeah. So that was done intentionally to be close to my parents as they got older. And I suppose the quid pro quo was that my own two children got to spend a lot of time with their grandparents as they grew up. Mm-hmm. So there was something of a reflection in terms of the way that I was raised myself in the townland close to my grandparents. So my two lads had the same experience as they grew up. So that was marvellous for us to be close by to my mum and dad as they got older. Yeah.
And you mentioned that it was always your hopes and dreams to stay here and hopefully move back into this old home. I know you built your family home where you raised your own kids, but you've moved back now into this home, and you said it was always in the plan to move back and make it live once again.
Yeah, well, you laid out plans sometimes don't come to fruition, and you never have any definite things that you can say it definitely will happen. But it was a hope of mine that we would be able to give this house a new lease of life. It was in good condition, very good condition, when my mum moved out of it, moved in with us for a year and a half. But there was a good roof on it, but it was still a cold house. The fire was constantly on. There was central heating in it, but it was difficult to heat to a comfortable level throughout the house. Mm-hmm. So we didn't think it would need so much work. Mm-hmm. to get it to where we wanted. We didn't think we'd have to demolish the 62 extension in particular. But once you start opening up any sort of
can
work,
of worms.
Yeah, any can of worms on an old house, everybody says it, but it's absolutely true. We got a big shock in the first 6 weeks in terms of just how much work we had to do.
You can see the finish line now.
Yeah.
It's basically a blank canvas. So for people who can't see it, you walk in, you've got a lovely open entryway with a stairs going up. And then you have three main rooms downstairs, your study, your living area and your kitchen. You have a utility room and you have three lovely bedrooms upstairs with a big bathroom, and you have an ensuite in your own bedroom. The bedroom we were standing in upstairs, your master bedroom that you and your wife will be sleeping in, you mentioned that members of your family were born there. Mm. Members of your family have died there. You're going to be sleeping there, warm and cozy. Mm. How important is that? I mean, the walls are just teeming with history. It's a privilege, I suppose, to be able to restore this six-generation family home and sleep in a bed where...
Yeah, some people might think it's a little bit freaky, but it's just great. I mean, it's just a privilege to be able to sort of have that long link, and you know, hopefully we'll be in the position to share it with siblings and their families and nephews and nieces who've been coming into that house since they were kids. So we would hope to be able to share it with the wider family and relations who all have a great grow for the place.
And you have two boys.
Yeah, two boys.
And you're going to hope to pass it on, and maybe they'll bring their families up in the home. The possibilities are endless now because of the effort you're putting in now.
Yeah, so the house we had was four bedroom and four living rooms, and we're now three bedrooms and three living rooms, but it doesn't really matter too much to us because we've gone from a family of four to a family of two, essentially, and visiting at weekends and so on. So we've more than enough space. And the old farm buildings in the yard here, they're unusual because they're all sized to the 1960s, really, in the 1970s. My father took a job off the farm in the late 70s, so he never expanded when most of the farmers going into big sheds and slatted units and so on. So we have these small, some of them stone sheds that we can use for the modern terminology is mud rooms. But for our outdoor gear and for hobbies and for gardening and so on, and we have more space outside, which is great to have.
Tell me about how you want the house to look. What type of design style will you be using? Will you be going super modern, or will you be going traditional and nodding to the past, or will you be doing a mix of both? And who is the main interior designer out of you and your wife?
My wife would be more inclined than that, but I think, again, we're more or less on the same page. The house we built 20 years ago, I had spent time in Scandinavia, and there was a sort of a Scandinavian feel to it in terms of quite a lot of natural wood and light colours and lots of sunlight, and it was a very bright house. I suppose the term that we would use for our house here, it was built essentially and lived, it was sort of a Victorian farmhouse, if you want to use that terminology, but it's contemporary farmhouse. So we still see light coloured walls, but we would see good use of light coloured timbers and cabinetry. There's going to be tiles downstairs, partly for energy efficiency in terms of the underfloor heating working well. Flagstones, it will give that country feel in the hall and the kitchen. And there's wood effect tiles in the sitting room and the study. But with the underfloor heating, it'll be warm underfoot, and we think it'll fit in well. Upstairs will be wooden floors throughout. So contemporary farmhouse, I think, is the style that we're trying to achieve. So we're not being slavish. We don't want a Victorian museum. We want something which is light and livable in, but we're not going ultra-modern either.
Mm-hmm. And is there any furniture that you'll be reusing, or anything from the old house that you're bringing back to life?
Yeah, so there's quite a few things we're bringing back in. Some of the furniture that came from the house will be coming directly back in terms of some wardrobes and dressers and kitchens. We had a joiner at the house yesterday looking at the doors, so there's something like 14 internal doors, and we have 7 from the house that...
Original.
They're not original. They were made maybe in the last 20, 25 years, but they're solid 6-panel pine doors that you can't buy anymore. So we're getting a joiner in to take away some of the doors and replicate them.
Oh, wow.
So they'll be bespoke, including the open plan double doors between the kitchen and the living room. They will be bespoke with 2/3 glass, which will match the older ones. So that's kind of all the doors will hopefully be of the same style. Some of them will be direct replacements, and some of them will be new. The one which I'm particularly looking forward to incorporating is an original door, which was in the old kitchen, and that door could be at least 100 years old. So there's no place for it in terms of its size that we could think of in terms of between rooms. So where we're going to put it is under the stairs, where the manifold for the underfloor heating is going to be. So it's just about the right size for under the stairs, and it's a lovely honeyed pine. I stripped it back many years ago myself from being painted. So that original door will be incorporated in under the stairs, and this new technology of a manifold for underfloor heating will be what it'll be entering into.
It's a real metaphor for the old and the new.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
How did your family end up in this house 200 years ago?
That's the question I don't really have the answer for. I have photographs of each owner in the family who owned it.
And they were farmers?
They were all farmers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were all farmers.
Including your dad?
Including my dad, yeah.
Okay. Do you fancy taking it back up now that you've moved back in?
I have. I'm very lucky to have 2 farmers who rent the farm off of us, and they're taking very good care of the land, and they're doing an excellent job in terms of
caretaking.
It's not so much caretaking. I mean, we have a lease with both of them, but one farmer has is transitioning the land that he has into organic farming, into organic oats, and the other farmer, who is a dairy farmer, when he took the land on and reseeded it, he has a very high percentage of clover in it, which means that there's very little fertilizer, very little inputs, and a huge amount of insect life on the white clover. So they're both doing their part in terms of biodiversity and habitat as well, which is great, which I really appreciate.
That's fantastic. And that fits into what you're interested in, Clifford, because not only are you bringing your home up to, you know, up to spec and carrying out this home energy upgrade, you're also in your personal life fairly involved in sustainability. Tell me a bit about that.
I'm a lecturer in the Technological University of the Shannon, and I lecture in broadly in environmental science on two different degree programs, and in particular on a stream of modules on sustainable development, renewable energy, and sustainable agriculture. So that's kind of my daytime job. So we're bringing some of that back into this project.
And it makes sense that you'd bring your passion and your career and all those things that you're preaching and you're actually living by it. That's something that I wanted to ask you about, is how you're marrying all of these modern technologies. I mean, you're putting a heat pump into an over 200-year-old house. Is that something you're conscious of, is staying true to the original architecture, the original feel of the house, and how you're going to bring the modern with also nodding to the past?
Well, the heat pump is not nodding to the past because it's you know, technically advanced. We are putting in a fireplace with a wood burning stove that will be room sealed with an external source of air for combustion and insulated flue to the top. We don't see ourselves using that very often, but it's there essentially as a backup if the power goes down. There's a nice story in relation to the way that the last energy upgrade was done in the house. In the 1970s, when I was maybe 8 or 9, my father, he saw the innovation of central heating, because the way the house was heated when I was very young was the open fire in the sitting room, a range in the kitchen, and that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And upstairs wasn't heated. So the innovation in the 70s was people started to put in central heating. So the central heating was worked on the basis of a back boiler in the sitting room and also a back boiler in the range. But I remember as a young kid going over to Birr in County Offaly in the very early days of Grant Engineering making back boilers. My father bought a back boiler and himself, a local plumber, plumbed it in. And then once they saw what fabrication was needed for the back boiler, the two of them, my father was a very talented welder, and they made a bespoke back boiler for the range themselves. And they linked the two of them into the heating system. So the upgrade in the 70s was two back boilers for a central heating system. So we're going back to the same company some 50 years later. We're going back to Grant's Engineering in Birr for their Irish designed heat pump.
Oh my God, and that's incredible.
So, and it's the same man is actually involved, Stevie Wow. Grant, who's a bit of a legend in home heating. So Stevie Grant, and he has made it into a multi-million euro business and exports to the UK and much further afield.
By staying up to date to the latest technology.
Yeah, so we're buying a heat pump from the same place as we got that back boiler back in the mid-1970s. So I think that's a nice connection.
That is incredible. That is absolutely incredible. And hopefully the house will be a bit warmer when you're finished, then it would have been in the 70s.
We kept the place warm with turf and firewood. Essentially, that was the fuel source. Mm-hmm. And then just in the last year and a half, just as my mother was getting elderly, we put in an oil-fired system so it could be constantly warm. Then she moved out and moved into our house. So the central heating now is going to be underfloor heating downstairs and radiators upstairs. And with the insulation levels and with the mechanical ventilation, we hope that we can have just a nice even heat. We don't need to worry about it. It'll just be kind of constantly on. And because the insulation levels are high, it will be very efficient and cost effective.
Brilliant. I suppose the most sustainable thing you can do is to recycle and upcycle and use what's there. And there's no better way to do that than to use an old traditional home. And I suppose this scheme is preserving Ireland's heritage, as well as being sustainable and making use of what's there. There's such amazing historical heritage homes all over the country that now could possibly get a new lease of life.
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity. And if the work and the construction and the thought and the love that went into those old houses to bring them into the 21st century is a remarkable thing to be able to do. And every additional house that comes online in Ireland at the moment is a huge benefit to the stresses and the challenges that we have. I'm thinking of my own two children in terms of, you know, the challenge they'll have to get a house in their lifetimes. So if we can bring some of these old houses that might be going to rack and ruin into the 21st century, and not only that, but they're not going to be guzzling oil and contributing to climate change. Instead, if they can operate in whatever system on renewable energy and have renewable energy along with energy efficiency, giving us sustainable energy, well, then we're on to a very good thing.
If the house could talk, what do you think it would say about all these changes that it's experienced over the years?
I suppose I was somewhat nervous because it's not just my house or our house, my wife and myself, or even my family's house, the two of us and my two sons, but it's our family's house in the broader sense with my siblings and my nephews and my nieces and my cousins. One of my cousins said that Gertavalla has been the one constant house in her life. She's moved house, I think, 6 times. But Gertavalla, this house here, has always been constant. It's always been there. If we're to look at what we've done, we're actually making far less changes in this to the look of the house and to the overall size of the house than my parents did in their time. Because when my father married my mother, they built an extension for my grandparents. And the 70s, they built an extension at the back for bathrooms and showers and so on. So we're essentially keeping that, but just bringing it up to date in terms of its energy efficiency. So the changes are not all that radical, but what is radical is the sustainability overall in terms of energy efficiency of the house and retaining the old, but bringing it into the new.
Moving back to the building site we're currently sitting in, you started in January 2025. You're hoping to be back in this coming January. So it'll have been a year's process. It's been long. I suppose you're just over halfway through. How has the renovation process been? Tell me about the highs and lows and the dust and the dirt. And I know you're fairly hands-on. You've got your work gear on. You're getting involved. Mm. How has it all been?
Sure. Look, it's a privilege to be able to do it. I have leave at the moment, so I'm enjoying just being involved on site. The highs, I suppose, just spending time down here is kind of a general high. Just seeing the progress, the builders are very brave in many ways, that they don't see any problem with knocking down half a house and building up half a house. They just get on with it and they know what to do. Whereas your typical amateur or DIYer is afraid that if they knock one part, something else will fall, and they don't know what the consequences will be. So it's great to see the confidence that builders have and the progress that they make and the thing moving on. And I can see we're at the stage now where I can see the house as it was coming back. So that's a big high. The lows, I suppose, at the end of January and into February, we had 3 elements which we didn't expect, but I suppose any wise person would have told us to expect the unexpected. The three big things were we expected to keep the roof on the old house because it had only been redone in 2011, but that wasn't possible because the rafters underneath weren't of fit condition and the wall plate was rotten. So the entire roof had to come off, and then we reused the slates and it went back on again. So that was an additional cost. The old house, which has stood for more than 200 years, the engineer, his advice was to underpin the old house, the walls of the old house. So there was a little bit of a question mark about that, was why did we need to underpin it when there was no issues and there was no cracks? But when the engineer is going to sign off on it, we took the recommendation and the old house was underpinned. Mm-hmm. And the third element then was the front facade of the house, which is really important to us in terms of the aspect as you come in, our driveway to it. The lintels over the windows were the original wooden lintels, and they had essentially disintegrated after that passage of time. So that had to be rebuilt as well. So those three big shocks added a substantial amount onto the overall budget costing. So that was, I suppose, the low point. But overall, look, we're going to end up in a house which we're very privileged to be able to say will bear a home in the future.
That's it for this episode. We'll be back next week, where we'll be catching up with Fionnuala J again and visiting a beautiful house in Port Arlington. If you'd like to find out more about any of the grants or schemes mentioned on this episode, you can head to the SEAI website and there are links in the show notes. Finally, we also have a special bonus episode on the feed all about green loans and finance, so check it out if you're starting to look at the numbers for your renovation plans.